Okay, cool. Oh, that's me. Okay, so the presentation I'm going to give today is, if you're familiar with persistent identifiers, it's bleeding obvious. Of course, having lived and breathed identifiers for the past year, I shouldn't assume that these things are obvious. So we're going to run through some of the consequences of trying to integrate persistent identifiers into repository workflows and getting pushback from the repository. This arose out of a specific use case that we had to deal with our hosts, the Arrow Project. In fact, there's no distinction between us. We are part of the Arrow Project at Monash. The summary for the impatient is that persistent identifiers must be integrated into all repository workflows, so you make sure that you get it right from the start as a persistent identifier. But integration out of the box tends to be too tight to be adaptable. So if you've got a configured system that does integration, it tends to be too inflexible. So you need reconfiguration or workarounds of those out-of-the-box workflows to adapt your persistent identifiers to changing or unforeseen requirements in your particular repository. Persistent identifiers, I optimistically hope that you're all familiar with, but a very brief run-through. They are labels whereby objects that can be on a repository or elsewhere are identified independently of their current location. So if you change the location of the object, but the persistent identifier remains the same, then you are still identifying it as the same thing. You are managing the object independently of its location. You change its server location, but you're still managing the same thing. And you provide access to that object independently of location, wherever it may happen to move around. The motivator for this being that if you change the location of an object to a different server or a different directory in your server, as happens all the time, links break, you lose track of things, it's difficult to keep track of them, difficult to manage. Another insight is that you are managing through persistent identifiers, you tend to be managing objects instead of instances of objects. When you move an object to another server, you're creating a new instance, a new duplicate of that object. But by having the identifier at one level up of abstraction, abstracting out from where it happens to be at any one time, you are managing the object itself and not just a specific instance of it. And this is useful for establishing the long-term reliability of access and management, which are what repositories are all about. So repositories really have been early and prominent and vocal adopters of persistent identifiers. And there are various strategies for what a persistent identifier can look like. There are various schemes. There are the PIDs in Fedora. There are handles. There are PERLs. There are URLs and URIs which can be managed to be persistent. Again, we don't want to be religious about saying that you have to use one particular schema. URLs can be persistent as long as you manage them to be persistent, which is about outside the scope of my talk today. And if you're going to have persistent identifiers feature in your repository, you need to configure the workflows of your repository. This is why it's a danger to amplify me, so that you make sure that the persistent identifiers stick from the start. Persistent identifiers in particular are impossible to patch after you release them. Once you've released your persistent identifier and people start using it, if you've got it wrong and you want to change it, you've got to tell everyone who's ever copied and pasted, bookmarked, published your identifier, they've got to change it now, which becomes impractical. It is impossible to change the identifier once it's out there released in the wild. In a perfect world, all your repository workflows should be using persistent identifiers to guarantee location independence because you really don't want to be managing a particular instance of an object. Everything you do with that object, copying it, moving it, and embellishing it with metadata, needs to rely on a location-independent identifier. Objects, moreover, should ideally be branded with a persistent identifier so they can survive, so the identifier survives moving outside of a repository. If you've got a PDF that has its persistent identifier embedded inside it, like in the front cover or wherever, and someone prints it out and someone brandishes a paper copy at you, you can tell from the persistent identifier where it came from and go back to the source. So even though it's no longer even in a digital medium, you are still, by branding it with the identifier, you can still link it back to its source and continue to manage it that way. So It is a prudent thing for objects to get the persistent identifiers early in their life cycle. Okay, the later you leave it, the more risk is that you're going to get a version of either the object or its metadata released into the wild without a persistent identifier. And once you've got a non-persistent identifier in the wild, it's very difficult to get back, to force the user to change back to a persistent identifier for it. Now, repositories use their persistent identifiers in the workflows, and persistent identifiers make the most sense for data that is managed rather than data that isn't, because it's all about establishing that reliability. So persistent identifiers are the concern of the repository manager. Okay, they've got to make sure, they're responsible for making sure that the objects in their repository have persistent identifiers. This means that the persistent identifiers become repository manager's responsibility. The repository managers need to make sure, like I say, that persistent identifiers are there. On the other hand, if they're ingesting an object that already has a persistent identifier somewhere else because of some other workflow, because of some collaboration, it is a bad idea to overwrite that already assigned persistent identifier. The whole point, that other workflow or that other repository or that other partner assigned a persistent identifier to the object was so people could keep using it. If you get rid of that identifier when you ingest it into your system, you're breaking that identifier. You're defeating the whole purpose. And that's difficult. We don't actually have a silver bullet for that. But it is a repository manager concern. They're responsible for maintaining the object's accessibility. They need to make sure the persistent identifier still works. And persistent identifiers are pervasive in workflows, which should mean they should be tightly integrated into your repository workflows. That's what should happen, right? Well, maybe. And an ingest workflow will kind of look a little bit like this to dazzle you with some UML. You've got your actor. The actor talks to a repository front end. The repository front end coughs up a URL for the object about to be ingested. And you request a persistent identifier to map to that URL. You create your own metadata for the object on the side, insert that persistent identifier into the metadata so that the object is branded with the metadata, so that the persistent identifier travels with the object, and finalize the ingest of the object, which now has a persistent identifier that points to the right URL that has the identifier branded inside the metadata, and you get back out both a URL for the object, which is not necessarily persistent, and more importantly, a persistent identifier which points to the object and will be managed to continue to point to the object wherever it lives. That's the workflow. Okay? Catch is, you can't intervene from outside the system to tinker with a persistent identifier while it's being generated. And you wouldn't expect to, because the whole point is that you've automated the workflow and it's being taken care of below the hood, whatever I mean. So you've locked in the identifier generation stage into your workflow, and typically that's going to be handled by your repository workflow engine, your repository front end, something like Vital or Fez or whatever. It's locked in there, it's tightly integrated, it's guaranteed to happen. It's also going to happen when you don't want it to happen, and that's where the problems start. And I'm going to run through some use cases where this tight integration leads to difficulties. First of all, I've checked out an object. I tinker with my object. I modify it. I tinker with some metadata streams. I tinker with some content. But I want to call this the same object when I put it back in. If I've got a tightly integrated workflow, I re-upload the object. Hey, presto, it gets a new identifier. But I was just fixing a typo. I didn't want it to be considered as a brand new object. I didn't want it to get a new identifier. Too late. If I've got a tightly integrated workflow in my repository front end, and I won't be naming any names, you're stuck with it. You will get a new identifier, which means you've broken the old identifier, which means you no longer have persistence. Your old identifier is going to point to the old uncorrected object, and you're stuck with it in perpetuity. That's bad. Another one. I've already got a persistent identifier in there. It could be because I inserted the identifier in a pre-automation workflow in my repository, but my current workflows, which are automated, don't know about that. So they're just going to start overwriting it. Or it could be that I've got content from a partner or from an online publisher which already has a persistent identifier which they would want to continue working, possibly working with it pointing to my repository, so they're going to be redirecting to me for access to that identifier, I shouldn't be getting rid of it. The arrangement may have been that I publish this object and it remain accessible under that old identifier. A particular use case of this is appropriate copy. There's multiple copies of the same object in a federation of repositories. A central search point will direct you out to individual instances of the repository, of the object in participating repositories in the federation, right? But they're not differentiated. A search will return an identifier for the object, which then gets resolved out into the particular copy, depending on where you want to, where you're coming from in other contexts. But if I keep changing the identifier in the metadata at each stage, then that won't work because I'm overwriting the identifier binding all those instances together as instances of the same work. So again, that's something you don't want to happen, and if you've got tight integration, it will. Third use case, I can't manage persistent identifiers outside my repository if it's that tightly integrated. And what that means is I'm locked in to the information model of the repository. And if you accept the information model of the repository as all you'll ever need, that's fine. But you may come up with an information model that you want your repository to support, which is not built into the repository, which the built-in workflows of your repository cannot cope with. I want to have a relationship service between objects. Okay, how do I break into that? I want to have appropriate copy structures. I want to have my own resolution protocols that mean I have to insert different kinds of URLs, associate those with the persistent identifier depending on context or resolver services. If I've got no access to the persistent identifier to edit it outside of this workflow, I can't do that kind of tinkering. It's difficult for me to model aggregation, okay, outside of the repository. I have to do it within the repository. And it may be the case that I don't want to do that, that I want to work from outside because the repository cannot deal with the information model requirements that I'm imposing. And I cannot do watermarking straightforwardly before I ingest it. If I wanted to insert the persistent identifier as in the front page of my PDF, okay, I need to know it before I ingest it so I can insert it in the PDF. But if the identifier only gets created on ingest as part of a tightly bound workflow, I'll have no idea what the identifier is until too late. If I then try and embed that into the PDF and re-ingest it and the workflow is still tight, by re-ingesting it, I'm going to get a new identifier because it thinks it's a new object and you're going to be chasing your tail in perpetuity. That's bad. And finally, any persistent identifier solution is going to be specific to a repository if you've got this tight integration. So you're going to have unspecified dramas if you migrate from one repository to another or even from one repository front end to another because they will have different workflows. They may well ignore what's already been in there. You're going to compromise your persistence of your identifiers again. So persistent identifier coupling can be too tight. In particular, if you've got tight coupling and no independent way of accessing the persistent identifier to edit it, then you've got no repository manager override for persistent identifiers. The repository manager can't step in and say, no, I don't want the identifier to behave this way, I want it to behave that way. If it's too tightly integrated, they don't have that capability. We are the Pillin Project, and I've discovered effects on my PowerPoint. But you may well have heard of us before. I won't go into any detail because of our time, but we have a website. We are a project that was yet another SII initiative, strengthening Australia's ability to use global identifier infrastructure. We're a cross-sectoral project. We have been developing identifier toolkits, sample applications, and starting to provide policy guidance on how to use identifiers. And we were approached by Arrow, who are our sponsors and hosts and sheltering organization, to deal with a particular problem with identifiers. And our generic advice is that, you know, if you've got tight coupling, you'll want to loosen it, and the solution to all the world's problems is service-oriented design.
This is not actually what we did, but this is the, again, ideal world scenario that I want to run through first. If you run your persistent identifiers through uncoupled services, then you can define those services from outside the repository to manage your persistent identifiers. And because the services are uncoupled, you can arrange your own workflow to manage your persistent identifiers sensitive to your context, and you set when, how the persistent identifier is created, updated, etc. Okay? If you've got access to the service, if you can talk directly through a well-defined interface to your persistent identifier box, you don't go open slather, but you have a way and access into it through a defined interface, you can arrange your own workflows. And we do provide support for that. Right as the end of, as of the conclusion of this project, we have a Java API for the handle identifier scheme, which is the identifier scheme we've ended up working with. In the future, we this is all conditional on further funding and no announcements we entered at this stage. But we have expressed interest in developing web services for this particular identifier scheme that will be agnostic, of course, about the repository type, because you could just plug in the generic web service, and ultimately web services that are agnostic about the persistent identifier scheme. So you could use the same web service to update a handle, a PERL, a URL, a life sciences ID, etc. That would be the desirable ultimate goal. We did not have time to do it within this project, but if you've got this generic service talking to a generic identifier, you can make your own generic workflows, and you wouldn't be at the mercy of one particular implementation, one particular repository box. And things would look a little bit like this. You've got the fixed workflow. I would intervene in the workflow, do a test if my persistent identifier is empty, create my own identifier as part of the workflow based not on whatever string generation algorithm is embedded in the default workflow, but say something based on the title. So I could override the repository's default generation algorithm for persistent identifiers with one more appropriate to my purposes. And I could do that because I've got a defined service that talks to the identifier backend in a defined way, and I've got control over it, and I can reconfigure my own workflow. That would be the ideal outcome. That's not always possible. Sometimes, and I owe this figure of speech to I think it was Andrew Trelaw, you've got to have the ambulance waiting at the bottom of the cliff. It is often hard for repository managers to break into repository automation. They can't reconfigure the workflow that the repository has set. That's either because they don't have the programming chops, which is allowed, or or the resources, which is also allowed, although regrettable, or the repository system is a completely closed box, not naming any particular repository names, or DSpace, but the repository system is closed off and does not allow you to tinker with it. That you don't have the possibility of that kind of access. You can't interrupt, you can't break into and intercept its workflow. So the alternative to that, deploying the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff, is to allow the repository manager manual access to the persistent identifier system. That allows the manager to patch the persistent identifier, which is okay so long as it's done before the persistent identifier is released to the public. Once it's released to the public, it's too late because they're going to have bookmarked it. They're going to start copying and pasting it, publishing it. You can't. It's difficult to get people to stop using it. And we have provided a web management tool for identifiers, the handle scheme that we use in particular, which includes a batch mode, which we'll illustrate. So what happens is you've got this workflow that you're stuck with that you can't break into. I unpublish my identifier, take down the identifier it had before I re-ingested it. This is a re-ingest use case, so it would overwrite the identifier. I take down the identifier it used to have, let it reassign its new identifier, and then overwrite it with the old identifier. That's the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. It overwrite my identifier, I restored it, and then published it again, and the user doesn't notice any difference. But if the persistent identifier is patched, and the persistent identifier is what you use to keep track of things, and it's changed, then how do you know what to change? What stays constant in the process? right? That's again chasing your own tail. The answer is, in the particular use case we went through with Arrow, it was the file name. Okay, the file name of the object stayed the same. It persisted. It doesn't in general, bad design, but in this particular use case, it worked. So even though the identifier changed, the file name didn't, and we were able to use the file name as the retrieval key to work out what had changed and restore the identifier to what it was supposed to be. And you can also use branding, watermarking, etc. to keep track of what the identifier should be if you've got workflows that go around changing the identifier. And that was what we did with our error instance in particular. We retrieved the identifier from the handle logs. We retrieved the new identifier from the ingest logs. We used the file name to correlate the two. And we were able to do as a batch process with the software that we developed in Pillin to restore the persistent identifiers to what they were supposed to be all along. Undoing the overwriting, the undoing of the identifier in the metadata that was being forced by that inflexible workflow. In conclusion, turnkey integration is a safe option. There is a reason why we use DSpace and Vital and Fez and so forth and Murdora instead of direct API calls to Fedora. You wouldn't want to be doing that. But turnkey integration will not anticipate all possible use cases or configurations. Now, true, this whole business with the re-ingesting, that you change the identifier every time you have to fix a typo, that's a bug in some sense, and that's bad behavior on the or on the repository front-end side, and you want to fix that. But if you end up migrating content to a new repository, you're going to be confronted with this anyway. So in that use case, you really do have to deal with to ensure persistence. So there's no getting away from the fact that turnkey integration is not going to anticipate everything. So persistent identifiers are needed in repositories. They need to be pervasive in repositories so that you never get that dependency on location which undoes persistence. But the integration of persistent identifiers to repositories out of the box tends not to be adaptable. And to make it adaptable, you can either take over the workflows with uncoupled services, which is, and a workflow engine, which is the right solution, or you can patch identifiers as needed before publishing, which is the close enough solution. And manual override does not mean open slather, and you really want to make sure you're managing this well. You need good governance, otherwise you have something unmanageable. And of course, all persistent identifier systems need good governance, and all repositories need good governance. You just need to make sure that when you're doing this override, it is also a managed process, and you know what you're doing. And you do have to get your workflows right, because persistence is, if not forever, certainly a long time. And that's conclusion.